I'm speaking about an introduction to vortex tangle dynamics. This will be a simple talk about hydrodynamic equations and a macroscopic description. And I want to say at the outset that I only started working in this area after visiting at Oregon and seeing the experiments that they have going there. And I'm trying to contribute sort of my picture of how I think these equations look. So this is, I'm actually trying these equations on you for the first time. This is my first talk about these equations. So I'm going to use some geometrical dynamics methods, but I'm not going to, which are based on Hamilton's principle. I'm not going to emphasize the methods. I'm going to emphasize the equations, which refine some previous equations that are in a paper by Bekarevich and Kolodnikov in 1961, in which they introduced terms from earlier papers by Hall and Vinon in this mutual friction interaction term, which is the coupling between the superflow component and a normal flow component of liquid helium 2. These equations that I'm going to be talking about, and also in some ways these HVBK equations, are relatives of a various other models of turbulence, and also liquid crystal dynamics. So I'll say just a little bit about that connection as it comes past. Okay, so let me remind you that this is Marc Breche's view graph, that we're working someplace in here in the experiment, right, in the helium 2 phase, where the liquid will be a mixture, Heidegger, will the liquid be a mixture of superflow and normal flow. And this mixture is characterized by the relative density of superflow and the normal flow. Rho n is the amount of normal density, which decreases to something very near zero by the time you get to 1 degree K. And so the superfluid then, which is the sum of the total mass, is the sum of these two, total mass density. And you see that where the experiments are is between 1 and 2 degrees, there's going to be some relative contributions of rho s and rho n. Okay, so here's the problem posed by Lodic earlier today, that in these helium 2 turbulence experiments at the Oregon group and elsewhere in Paris, the experiments show behavior which is essentially classical in some of the things that are measured, in particular in energy spectra. And then the question is, why is that? And I'm not going to answer that question. I'm just saying this is what poses the question. And I'm going to develop a framework for beginning to address this question.
And they somehow they deduced E of K from the measurements.
Well, this is a schematic. And what they actually look at is the, as Lodic showed, they look at the time frequency spectrum of pressure fluctuations. And they compare, you see how that spectrum changes as a function of temperature as you pass through the lambda line, that doesn't change. What? That's a tabling, right. So I want to, these on this view graph are all icons. This is just an icon that says that the superfluid flow looks like the classical fluid flow. I want to think of the superfluid flow in the Landau theory. It has two components. It has a superflow component with velocity Vs and rho S. And it has this has excitations, which are regarded as, in this phenomenological model, as the normal fluid. And the variables are the normal fluid velocity, the normal fluid density, and there's a chair right here, Srini. And the entropy density of the normal fluid, which is the heat measurement of the heat. We can, I think, generally think of the temperature as isothermal because of the high thermal conductivity in helium-2. And the component that we're interested in is this vortex tangle, and the variable is described by the vorticity of the superfluid velocity, which is zero in the Landau theory. But after this, if velocities are sufficiently large, we create this vorticity in the turbulence, and this tangle is somehow coupling these components of the flow. The idea is to describe something about the dynamics of this tangle and how it couples. The total density rho is the sum of rho s and rho n, and the total momentum density is rho s vs plus rho n vn.
Do you view the tangle as what would arise in Marx calculations if you flow this
faster? I would. But Marx calculations are at t equals zero, and the calculate, and then where the hydrodynamic description doesn't even apply, because Bodick said about the phonons have infinite mean free path, and so there's not really a hydrodynamic description at such low temperatures. So we're talking at temperatures just below the lambda point and above about 1 or 1.5 degrees, where there's a substantial mixture of, you know.
So the mean free path drops, increases rapidly when you go from 2 to 1.
It's very, very small, close to the lambda point. It's about micron size at these temperatures. It's about, I think, millimeter at 0.7, and it's astronomical at 0.1.
Right, so we're in a situation where we still have a small mean free path.
Why using this icon for previous slide?
How?
It's a red line
for... okay, why? I'll tell you why. Okay, so in the Landau theory, you think of coming from T equals zero and going to higher temperatures. So this is the ground state, this is excitations on the ground state, okay, and this is just some picture of spaghetti. Okay, so in these counterflow experiments, what they do is they give a superfluid a pulse of heat, and it excites the normal fluid. As basically, this is the second sound. These are the waves.
Okay. Yeah, but they're all the excitation of supercomponent.
Yes, but this is just the picture. Okay, I told you these are only icons in this picture. I'll show you equations. I don't regard the equations as icons. Okay, so what about changing the Landau 2 fluid model and modify it to include the dynamics of the vortex tangle? You know, people have been talking earlier today about the rotating tank, rotating bucket experiments in this tangle, and they are talking about a variable L, which is Vinon's variable. It is the vortex length per unit volume. So it has here... dimensions of 1 over length squared, right? So people are talking about that as introducing another length scale into the problem. And there is some issue about, this is a homogeneous time derivative, homogeneous in space, and there have been a lot of discussion about how this particular variable changes by creation of line length and destruction of line length in these parameters A and B. And in the second half of the 80s and early 90s, second half of the 80s, Klaus Schwarz derived these coefficients from the microscopic theory. And using nonlinear Schrodinger equation and the dynamics of the nonlinear Schrodinger equation that Mark talked about. And this part of the theory is something that I will not talk about because it's purely microscopic aspects. I'm going to be talking about macroscopic hydrodynamic aspects. So I would, when I show an alteration of Vinon's equation for an spatially inhomogeneous flow, I'm just going to be altering this time derivative.
Is okay. Inhomogeneous on what scale?
On the scale of, say, 1% of the size of the apparatus. Okay, so length scale, the things that are changing at scales down to, say, 1% or so. It's still macroscopic scales. Okay.
This is only for supercomponents, right?
Yes, this is the L, this vortex length per unit of volume, is just the magnitude of the macroscopic superfluid vorticity divided by the circulation, quantum circulation. Okay, and the thing which is, makes this so delightful is this ratio for kappa, H over M, the two microscopic variables, has a kind of a macroscopic size. You know, in bug units of centimeters squared per second, you actually get something which is like the viscosity of the normal component of the fluid. So it's actually, and Mark was talking about, thinking about defining a Reynolds number in terms of this quantity earlier. So there's obviously other dimensional parameters that come into this problem because of this additional unit. And yes?
If you have all convex vortex lines parallel to each other, a number, a quantity like L has a great deal more meaning than if it's a random tangle, isn't it?
Right, absolutely, mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so what I'm going to do is, for the macroscopic description, I'm just going to actually try to get equations for omega, okay? And I'll relate it to L this way, and think of omega as the vortex patch local vorticity in a macroscopic sense. So this is meant to actually to sort of distance what I'm talking about from the microscopic theory. I can't say anything about this part. And this part was introduced by Vinon's intuition using dimensional analysis, and then Klaus Schwarz did some beautiful work about the interaction of vortex lines with each other, and the and involving the curvature of these vortex lines and so forth, and actually got expressions for the A and Bs in terms of microscopic quantities. So I want to say from the outset, the type of theory that I would be developing would not get microscopic things like this. Okay, this has to do with the details of the interaction, and will be left out of the type of, you can think of it as kinematics. Kinematics with a little bit of thermodynamics in it that I'll be describing. Okay, so I'm interested in what are the equations that we actually need to simulate in the helium-2 turbulence at finite temperatures, just as an initial value problem in hydrodynamics. So, just as a component of normal modeling of hydrodynamics like people do in turbulence modeling, that one needs to formulate the hydrodynamic equations. And there have been various approaches to doing that in the last 40 years, which have had varying degrees of success, beginning with this phenomenological model of Landau, the two-fluid model, which is very successful in the absence of vorticity. And, in fact, I think most physicists agree that the purpose of the microscopic theory in the years since then has been to try to substantiate the macroscopic theory and explain why it works so well. These people all work at the phenomenological level. I will be comparing later with the Bekarevich and Kolotnikov 1961 paper, but before that paper, Kolotnikov did a variational derivation of the two fluid equations. There is some famous work by Zilfel and Lin in the same direction, and in Holland, Gerst has continued this tradition. Much of this work has been to try to introduce the dynamics of the vortex elements in the macroscopic hydrodynamic framework. There's a notable paper by Hills and Roberts in 1977 where they considered the continuum mechanics properties of Bekarevich and Kolotnikov's equations and simply asked, do they satisfy all the usual things like objectivity, material frame, indifference, and so forth? Because they looked, these equations look a little special. And one of the things which came out of this analysis by Hills and Roberts is what is really the main issue of the discussion today, is that the vortex tangle, if you want to think of it as another component of the fluid, cannot have additional inertia because those vortex lines are so small. They're one angstrom, and they could have nothing in them. They're too small to have any inertia. And this was one of the difficulties of Hills and Roberts' papers. They had to introduce an inertia for the vortex tangle. There's also a difficulty with Gerst's approach. So the equations that were introduced by Becker-Avis and Kolodnikov, I'll discuss later in more detail, but they've been simulated for 20 years by a variety of people, and probably Carlo Beringhi is one of the main leaders of the charge in this direction, as an applied fluid dynamics problem. They simply compute what are the effects of these additional phenomenological terms in the Becker-Avis-Kolodnikov equations. And there's also some Poisson bracket description and derivation of similar equations, some by the Landau Institute group, and some that I did with Boris Kupferschmidt 15 or 20 years ago. And you see that Kolodnikov has been involved with this for over many years and taken various approaches to it. And it turns out that it's still an interesting question in physics to try to model what this interaction is. And now that we have the Oregon experiments and the Paris experiments, it becomes really timely and important to get the equations right if we're going to start doing high-grade simulations of them. Okay, so the main issue here is to introduce a momentum of the vortex tangle without introducing additional inertia. Okay? And since the vortices are massless. Okay, so here's the result. Here's the equations. Yes?
When Klaus Schwarz was doing his vortex dynamics calculations.
Yes.
He was simply not using these equations, was he?
No, he was not.
This
is a nonlinear Schrodinger equation. And he was using, if there was any interaction at all with the normal fluid, he would use an imposed normal flow. Right? And the pictures that we saw earlier
I just wanted to see the difference.
Well, one difference is that this should be a self-consistent interaction with feedback. Okay, so here's the summary. In this business, you have to say what frame you're in. So we're in the normal fluid frame. And here is momentum conservation and the equation for the superfluid velocity. Everything looks rather normal, actually. Let's look at this equation. If rho s were 0, right, if we could take that one out, and this would just be the Euler equation for the normal fluid. Okay, so this will take us back. We would add viscosity here later, but I want to talk about the nonlinearity first. This is the coupling term, okay? And so here omega is the curl of the superfluid velocity. Lambda, which is appearing here, is a thermodynamic derivative of the energy, the energy per unit volume of the system with respect to the curl, and it's taken in this HVBK theory to be proportional, a constant times omega hat, the unit vector. Okay, so what appears in here is the curl of this guy. Mu is the chemical potential, and this VSN squared is the square of the difference in velocities. All right, if rho s, rho n, rho n, and the entropy are all constants, we can impose that these velocities are incompressible, and simply take the difference of those two velocities, and here's the normal flow equation. So it would be...
When you wrote down 1 and 2, where did you write them down from?
I will explain the derivation. This is total momentum conservation,
yeah.
Okay, and this is the equation for the superfluid velocity that I'm going to derive. Okay, and it comes from a variational principle. Okay, so you see the first important thing is that if we multiply that one by rho n, that one by rho s, add them together, the right-hand sides cancel. Okay? So that's what the statement is here, that in the normal fluid equation, there should be a corresponding term as in the superfluid equation, so that you conserve the total momentum. They should balance. Okay. Now, to close the system, we want preservation of incompressibility of both velocities. So this one here, incompressibility, will determine the chemical potential, and this one here, incompressibility of the normal velocity, will determine the pressure. Okay, so this is a closed system. We could introduce, say, just periodic boundary conditions and start this as an initial value problem in hydrodynamics. So we should talk about...
Where do you get this Vs from Vn?
Oh.
Don't you need Vn?
I do, yeah. So here's Vn right here in the total momentum. Okay.
The equations I thought were in the frame of reference of Vn, right?
Right. What I need to say about in what frame is when I, you see, the velocity and sort of the thermodynamics of the system depends on what frame of velocity, the Galilean frame that you're in. Okay, and so when I say in the Vn frame, I mean when I take that derivative, I'm taking it in the Vn frame. Okay, that's what I mean.
You think that rho S and rho n is interpenetrating, right?
I sure do. I think, yeah, just think of it as a two-component interpenetrating flow.
Why is omega a thermodynamic variable?
Why is what?
Omega a thermodynamic variable. The omega super...
Well, okay. So you think of the vortex tangle as having some influence on the energetics. Okay?
So your omega is some sort of an average.
Right.
Not the individual.
It's a local hydrodynamic macroscopic vorticity. It involves a lot of these quantum vortex lines.
So you really?
No. I think it wouldn't be wise to try to go from hydrodynamic theory to that. Let me tell you about the properties of the equation.
Is lambda basically like some angular momentum?
It's the energy it costs to change the per unit volume to change the vorticity of the vortex patch.
When you do thermodynamics with an angular velocity, and you usually have the conjugate variable as being like an angular momentum.
Right. This is a thermodynamically conjugate variable to the vorticity. Right. And this idea was introduced by Bekarevich and Kolotnikov, or at least by then. You know, they used it. So let me explain why I think that those equations make sense and how to interpret the equations, because it's this interpretation by the circulation theorems that is the way that we understand the coupling of the two flows. Okay, so this system has two Kelvin circulation theorems. Okay, the first one is, this is basically for the vortex patch. And the time rate of change of the circulation of a loop that moves with this velocity, VL, which we'll talk about in a second, of the superfluid velocity circulation is constant. So its time derivative is zero. VL is the superfluid velocity plus this combination. This combination comes from the relative momentum density of the two fluids. And in fact, there's a point on the previous slide that I want to emphasize. I passed over it. I want to look at this term here in the limit that t is zero. Okay? So in that limit, I'm going to take, so rho sub n will be zero. That rho sub n will cancel this, and that rho will be rho sub s, and we'll have this term here. This term here is Vinon's vortex line tension term, which also does appear in the nonlinear Schrodinger equation or Gross-Kitayevsky equation description. This is an important term. It's a limit of this term. This term is, by the way, conservative. No, this is not the entire mutual friction term. This is a reactive part of the mutual friction. And this has been a bone of contention for quite a long time. This is, what does the line tension of the vortex line do? And here it is simply emerging naturally as a t equals zero limit of that coupling term. there's a point about this, because Bekarevich and Kolondikoff introduced this term by hand. Okay.
So you can think of this as a energy, right?
No, it's a if you
multiply. You can think of as the energy of vortex line carrying the line, right?
Yeah, but it's got a gradient in it. It's a force. When you multiply by rho s, this is a force.
Okay.
No, no. I'll get it. But you have to get that phenomenologically. So we're talking about a phenomenological approach to get hydrodynamic equations, and to compute hydrodynamically how the two fluid coupling affects the motion. All right. So first of all, for a loop that moves with velocity VL, which is the mass average velocity plus 1 over rho times this, the curl of this thermodynamic variable, lambda. So what we want to think about this is this guy here. I called it VL because if you think of a little of the loop surrounding a little bundle of vorticity, right, and that circulation is preserved, then that's actually the velocity that that bundle moves with. Right, that's the, if you put a loop around it, it'll stay around it. So that describes sort of the coherent motion of that bundle. Okay.
It defines VL.
This is an implication of those equations, and it's to try to interpret what those equations are telling us. Okay. Now, the other in the absence of dissipation, without the viscosity. The other equations can be summed. The momentum equation can be written this way as a circulation conservation of the weighted sum of the circulations of the two pieces of the momentum together. So this is a counter-circulation theorem. Okay, so where earlier we were thinking about those counterflow equations, and you know where we were we had rho s plus vs plus rho s vs plus rho in vn was equal to zero. Now, this is what happens when you have actual motion going on and things are homogeneous. It's that same combination, but now you integrate this guy around a loop that moves with the normal velocity and that guy around a loop that moves with a superfluid velocity in order to interpret the momentum conservation. So I think of these two equations as being the constraints that describe the coupling between the vortex tangle and the normal flow. And you see that the superflow only affects the velocities of the loop, but does not affect the value of the circulation. Right, so the value of the circulation that comes in is entirely from the vortex tangle.
Where is the coupling exactly? I mean, this looks
well, for example, we start out with... right. So it's you have the coupling in the momentum equation.
But is that often the same relation, or is it something that you want to tell us a bit more about?
This relation follows from the bottom relation follows from this momentum equation, right? By using incompressibility, and then using just the definition of d by dt of a loop integral. And the first one follows from the second equation by doing the same thing to just find out what velocity is the loop moving with. It's determined by that right hand side.
I'm confused. Go back to the interaction, and there are various velocities. These calculations are moved around by different things.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
That's right.
Right. Okay. So if you want to think about this in terms of a momentum conservation, then you should with this equation.
Yeah.
But you can also think of it in terms of counter circulation. Okay, so there's, and if you want to think about it in terms of Kelvin circulation theorems. I want to think about how does the vorticity of the superfluid contribute. I don't quite see it in the momentum equation, but I see it. Yeah, but in the next one, I see it better because this contribution comes entirely from the vortex tangle. Okay, and so if it were a potential flow, that would be gone. This is where the coupling comes in. Okay? And the same thing here. This comes entirely from the curl part of the part of V that has a curl, from the vorticity. Right? So the coupling, here the coupling is a little bit difficult to understand, but you can see that it involves Vn and Vs and relative amounts of rho in this velocity, but that velocity is in fact just the mass average velocity. Okay? Then with this correction.
Lambda
is phenomenological, and lambda is a constant times omega hat.
Don't have any systems for a transition from a rotational to rotational.
That's coming up. Okay. So here's the outline for the remainder of the talk. I first want to talk about the Hall-Vonnegut Bekarevich-Kolodnikov equations, because they're slightly different from the ones I just showed you. These equations are derived by assuming mass, momentum, energy conservation, plus two phenomenological equations for Vs, the superfluid velocity and the entropy density. And there is an indeterminacy in the energy equation for Bekarevich and Kolodnikov's approach, because there is a dot product of two vectors, and you could have the null space of one vector. So they inserted T. That's where the HV part comes from in those equations. They inserted that line, the vortex line tension, by hand in that equation. Okay. However, if you now take their equations and demand momentum conservation, it actually removes that T directly. Okay, so T, without T then, Bekarevich and Kolodnikov have the same equations that we have with this equation here for the vortex patch evolution, but with a different velocity, V capital L. We were looking earlier at V little L. And these are the Hall and Vinon coefficients, B prime and B. And Lodic said earlier that B was small, B was order 1 and B prime is small.
Depends what temperature regime you are working.
Yeah, well, there's a very probably the most important thing to notice about those coefficients is that they are another dimensionless numbers, two more in this theory. Okay, that's probably the main feature to notice is extra dimensionless numbers come into this problem. Okay. Their equations for the vortex patch have the same form as the ones I just showed you. And they allow, however, for this guy here is similar to what I just showed you, but I have I don't have an extra coefficient there, just the one. And I have a difference there. And here is the mutual friction part. Okay, this guy crossed into omega gives you an omega cross omega, which gives you the damping. This one here is omega cross this part, is actually a reactive force. It conserves an energy. Okay, so this is the phenomenological piece. This is where you introduce the dissipation. Okay, so after talking about the Bekarevich-Kolodnikov equations, I will simply say, I'll give you the variational formulation of the equations I just discussed, and this is in this framework called the Euler-Poincaré framework, which comes from reducing Lagrangians in Hamilton's principle with respect to their symmetries, and it guarantees the conservation laws that these guys were using and also the circulation theorems. It removes the indeterminacy. It adds the momentum for the vortex tangle, but it turns out that it doesn't add inertia, because we introduce the vortex tangle as another degree of freedom, but then we show that there is an invariant subsystem of the full system for which the mass of the full system is the same as the original mass. So there's no additional inertia. Okay, and then in this framework you see the connection to things like liquid crystal models and a sort of uniform approach to the modeling complex fluids with hydrodynamics. Okay, so the first thing about this actually, the first thing I want to say about this type of equation for the vortex patch is its relationship to Vinon's equation. Okay, so now I'm writing what I would write for the mutual friction. I would have a slightly different form here. And you see, from this equation, we can write the equation for the entropy. Right? This is the equation for the entropy. It's in standard form. If we now put in Vinon's vortex line length per unit volume as the magnitude of the vorticity divided by kappa, we can use this equation, and this will tell us how we should write Vinon's equation in an inhomogeneous, spatially inhomogeneous fluid. So here are the microscopic terms for creation and annihilation of line length, and there is also a flux term and another creation term in an inhomogeneous material. So the first thing that happens from an equation like this, which besides having a Kelvin theorem, is that it gives you a form for Vinon's equation in a spatially inhomogeneous medium. And this is the form that you get whether or not you're using Becquerevich and Kolotnikov or the Euler-Poincaré form. This is the important feature. In many other models of Vinon's equation, people left out this guy and just treated this as a density. Okay, but this is I think, a very important kinematic term.
What is VL?
VL is this whole velocity. Okay, so this is about the alignment of the vortex, the local vorticity, with the strain rate tensor of the VL, which appears in the Kelvin, in the equation for the vortex patch. Okay, so here is the microscopic part that for which I have no models, and here is the macroscopic part that introduces the spatial dependence.
How do you introduce the microscopic? I thought that everything is determined.
These guys are determined.
In your equations.
Oh no! How do I do them? I told you, it's a macroscopic theory. I cannot say anything about the microscopic dynamics.
Your entropy equation doesn't happen, right?
Yeah, sure it does. Oh, I see. Yes, right. That's right. My entropy equation does not. I want to interpret it in terms of Vinon. I use this relationship. Here are Vinon's.
What k? It's just a constant, right?
Yeah, this is 10 to the minus 3 centimeters squared per second.
So then you want to identify the two terms in your equation with ALT.
No, I don't. I want to add those terms, okay, and go from a homogeneous time derivative, okay. So what Vinon's equation has, d by t of L, is this.
No, I don't understand the logic. How can you add things? You have equations. You have answers. How are you going to add now things?
Okay. It's actually simple. So Vinon wrote d L dt in a homogeneous medium, okay. So this is how dLdt looks in an inhomogeneous medium. Okay, the rest of the modeling comes from either Vinon's dimensionless number approach or Schwartz's microscopic.
Okay? So you are retain the same meaning as where
right. Yes, they have the same meaning as before, but you see the interpretation of the experiments is the issue. Right? When you're measuring the scattering of the second sound off the vortex tangle, you are bringing out a measurement of L. Okay, but if you have an inhomogeneous flow, what you're actually bringing out is all this other stuff too. Okay, so inhomogeneity in the experiment will change the interpretation of the measurement.
Gerald, could you actually flash up again the Becquerevich-Kolotnikov equations to compare with the ones that you have here?
Sure.
So what's the difference? I mean, I see that your lone coefficient is now set to 2.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Is that the only change? It looks like you also have rho n where they have rho s in some places.
Yes, that's the point. So Becquerevich and Kolotnikov's introduced two things. First, they introduced a T here, which I've dropped here, okay, which is in fact the zero temperature limit of this guy. And then they introduced this term. Well, these two terms actually came from Hall and Vinon, right? But they introduced the t equals 0 limit of this quantity as an additional velocity here. Okay, I've dropped that because of momentum conservation. And then as a result, of, if you keep that term, then that term looks rather small. Okay, but if you modify that term to this one, then in fact the zero temperature limit of the, that one is the one they were putting in, and that's one of the reasons why that's small, because the other thing differences are small. Okay, the last slide also will compare that again. Yeah, see, this is a mutual friction term, right? It's still there. I don't have any, that's a microscopic modeling parameter that's introduced here. What is captured by the macroscopic theory is a piece of this. Was captured by the macroscopic theory, and which was never captured before, is this term here with no arbitrary coefficient, and as the reactive force. This is the conservative part of the mutual friction force. This is the damping part. This is a reactive force that actually conserves an energy, and it's the same energy as Bekarevich and Kolodnikov introduced. Okay, so one of the features here is to distinguish between additional forces in the coupling that dissipate and additional forces that simply transfer momentum.
Could I ask you before you get on with that?
Sure.
Is there a way in which I could see that the additional terms you introduced for accounting for inhomogeneity carry any a priori meaning? I mean, can you interpret it in some way?
They follow from this Kelvin theorem. Okay, so the Kelvin theorem gives an equation, that vortex stretching equation. If I dot the vortex stretching equation with omega again, I'll get an equation for omega squared. That's the entropy equation, and it's used every day by people in modeling turbulence who are interested in entropy. And the issue about the rate of change is the issue of the alignment of the vorticity with the strain rate tensor, not of the mean flow, but of this other velocity, the VL, right? So it's the velocity, it's an effective velocity, it's the mass average velocity plus a contribution coming from the curl of lambda. Okay, so we have a choice now, actually. We can go through the Bekarevich-Kolodnikov model, the phenomenological model, and see what happened, and we will recover the same form of the equations for omega. So I think actually the lesson here is that this Kelvin theorem form for omega is probably right. Right, it's the right form. It's partial omega partial t is the curl of some velocity crossed into omega, and then that will give you an equation for Wien-Enzel. And the issue is to determine what that velocity is in that form, velocity crossed into omega. Bekarevich and Kolodnikov found one form of it by introducing equations for mass, momentum, and energy, and defining the energy this way here. And they're actually working in the superfluid frame, so their kinetic energy has 1/2 rho s Vs squared plus a coupling term where P prime is the relative momentum density, and here is the energy per unit volume epsilon, which satisfies this thermodynamic relationship, and here is that lambda. This is the energy it costs to change the vorticity of the vortex patch here. This is the usual temperature. This is the chemical potential of the mixture, right? And this is the relative velocity. Bekarevich and Kolodnikov, following Hall and Wien-Enzel, chose this lambda to be a constant times omega hat. Okay, and so here's this is J. It's the total momentum, which can be written this way, and this is, so we'll have all these parts of the equation will agree. And here's the momentum tensor, same as I wrote before. And rho n is the difference of rho and rho s. And the pressure P is now a thermodynamic variable for a compressible mixture, which is given by, this is Euler's relation with this additional part. And what Bekarevich and Kolodnikov did was modify, this term here would be the Landau potential flow part. They modified it to some sort of additional force that's going to depend on the vorticity. Okay? And they also put in a dissipation of heat term. Okay.
What's omega
bar? Omega hat.
Okay,
omega hat is the unit vector in the direction of omega. Okay, so
in this case, both fluids are compressible.
Both fluids are compressible, then we have to take the incompressible limit. Okay, we'll follow what they did. In their energy conservation law, they have their total energy. They wrote it as, you know, in the sort of grouping terms, but they came to a point where there was an indeterminacy. Okay, in which the sum of their force on the right-hand side of the superfluid equation and this combination, omega across the difference in velocities, was dotted against this combination here, J. But J is, in fact, J minus rho Vn is, in fact, proportional to that difference, and there's a cross product there. So this guy can have any coefficient he wants, or can be multiplied by any function, or it could be zero, it could be gone. Okay, they use this indeterminacy, in fact, to introduce that line element tension T into the equation for the superfluid. Okay, so they used it, and this is what they got. They got the equation. Here's your the form of our equation for the vorticity curl of VL minus VL cross omega, and there's that line element tension term. Okay, this is T. There's the other things we were looking at. And here's the remark that B and B prime are dimensionless coefficients that come from the Hall and Vinon experiments. This is the bone of contention here. And this is the thing which appears in people's arguments about what they call the Yordansky force, the force of on a vortex as it moves through the superfluid.
Isn't that infinite where omega
vanishes? Absolutely. This looks like it could be a problem. Okay? But don't worry. It'll go in a minute. Okay? It wouldn't have been a problem in the momentum relation because we would have been, before taking the curl, we would have multiplied by rho s and it would have cleared that term. Okay? Right. Well, okay. So if we introduce now the momentum conservation for this in this paper, in the incompressible case, it turns out here are these two equations, one for Vs and one for Vn. If we multiply that one by rho s, and we have already multiplied this one by rho s and this by rho n, if we add these two, we'll get the momentum conservation law, and there's that extra term, which can't be there, I would argue, because first of all, it's multiplied by an arbitrary function. Right? And secondly, so it's indeterminate. And secondly, if it weren't zero, we would have to drop it to conserve momentum. So we must drop it. Okay. And fortunately, it actually comes back, because if you then modify this contribution the way I did with the putting in rho in here, when you take the t equals zero limit, you recover exactly t. Okay, so that's their issue was to use the indeterminacy of the phenomenological approach to substitute the Hall and Vinon line element tension force. And they did that. Okay, and in fact, I think they did it correctly for the compressible case. But in the incompressible case, I think that it's not correct. Okay. My equations don't deviate much from their compressible equations, but they certainly do in the incompressible limit. And I had a lot of trouble getting the incompressible limit to make sense, and I finally decided it was an indeterminacy they were using. And they used it in one place, and if they would have actually been determined. They just didn't quite check the final steps. Because this equation appears as one of the last equations in their paper, and this equation appears 15 equations before, and the comparison wasn't quite made. Okay, so I'll simply remind you that what these equations mean. When you have VL cross omega here, and you have this sort of same combinations. This is still Becquerevich Kolonnikov. If we drop their T, the line element tension, you see that velocity and that velocity are the same. So the important feature is that it's crossed with omega, is that if omega is parallel to this, the two equations will decouple. Okay, because there's omega cross that gives zero, and then that cross omega gives zero. So this is a very interesting form, which I will try to study more later. This omega cross form. So let me show you where the equations come from Hamilton's principle, and it's simple and geometric, the variational formulation. Here's the Lagrangian. I'm doing this in the normal fluid frame, in which here's the kinetic energy, here's the potential energy. There's a difference between them in Hamilton's principle, and there's this coupling term here with A. And what is A? A is the part of Vs which has a curl, and U is the gradient of phi. And this, we actually saw this earlier today when Loddick was talking about superconductivity. This is basically adopting the vortex tangle into the superfluid equations the same way that you introduce the singular magnetic field lines in the superconductor. Okay? My coupling depends on this A, and it depends on the difference of these two momentum densities for the normal fluid, and this thing N times this the velocity of the vortex patch. Okay? N is the momentum density associated with the vortex tangle. And if N is not equal to rho, then there's an additional inertia in the vortex tangle. It turns out that the Euler-Poincaré equations, which are the Eulerian representation of the Euler-Lagrange equations for this type of Hamilton's principle, allow you to set, after taking variations with respect to everything in sight, it allows you to set rho equal to N at initially, and it will stay preserved. Okay, so this is very simple. This, and if you want to think about this in terms of momentum density, you can think of what would be the variational derivative of this Lagrangian with respect to Vn. It'll have a rho Vn, it'll have an A rho, which will be an N rho, and it'll have a contribution from this, and it will appear here, and it'll be the total momentum in the equation. And this will be the total momentum equation. And if you want to consider the momentum associated with the vortex patch, you take the variation, that's defined to be the variational derivative of this Lagrangian with respect to the vortex effective velocity here. And this is the additional equation that we need for to determine A, the vortex part of the superfluid velocity. Now, it turns out that such Hamilton's principles exist elsewhere. This type of coupling exists elsewhere, and it's very interesting. It happens in a form of MHD when the Hall drift field is still there, where the inertia of the electrons relative to the ions in a neutral fluid plasma is negligible, but not their charge density. They still have to have charge density for neutrality. So you get MHD with an additional field called the Hall field, that allows the magnetic field lines to drift relative to the ions. Okay, that's the analog for MHD of this drift of the vortex patch velocity through both the other fluids. Yeah, so it's rotational, right? And the point is that there's a potential part of the superfluid velocity, which is still part of the Landau two fluid theory, and then there's a curl part of the superfluid velocity, which will drift relative to both the superfluid and the normal fluid, and will have its own velocity determined by this equation. And so it's the analog, first of all, of the Hall drift velocity, and secondly, it's the analog of the vector field, magnetic vector field in superconductivity. And so I think this is the simplest Lagrangian you could build. These are the equations. There are auxiliary equations for conservation of the mass associated with the vortex patch. There's the heat equation. Here's conservation of the total mass. This equation here is the Misha. This equation is the velocity, the potential part of the superfluid velocity. And you see, it allows for having a curl initially, right? But if you set the curl to zero, then this remains a potential flow. So there are two elements of the system of equations which are invariant subsystems of a larger dynamical system. And the interpretation now of the curl part of the velocity is like the Hall drift of a magnetic field line. Magnetic field lines also have no inertia, of course. Okay.
Yeah, do you think it will be stabilized relatively
large? Well, actually, there's a lot you can do. When you'll pass over to the Hamiltonian formulation of this, then you can apply all the ingredients of nonlinear stability for Hamiltonian systems, critical points, and then you can ask your question in that framework. You know, just in that framework. How much longer would you like? 2 minutes? Okay. So the first statement is, here are the variational derivatives, and the way the equations combine is that partial time derivative of rho minus n is zero. We can set it equal. Initially, it'll stay equal everywhere. Okay, I'll mention briefly the connection to the alpha models and other order parameter fluids. The alpha model is a cousin of these equations. It's a much simpler cousin, but it's one for which the energy also depends on the vorticity. So if we rewrite this part of the kinetic energy in the H1 metric for the alpha model in terms of the vorticity, you see that you're going to get something when you take the variation. So there's a contribution to the energy. That's the first statement. The second statement is more complicated, which I won't make, but simply say that similar equations exist for the motion of defects in liquid crystals. Okay? And that's a whole area which I would like to develop. Here's the Hamiltonian formulation of the system. The momentum, the total momentum, is the relative momentum plus this additional contribution from the vortex patch. The vortex patch momentum is minus that guy times n. N and rho are equal. If you take the sum of those two, those will cancel, and this will be j. Okay, so the total momentum will be conserved, since actually the momentum of each one of these is conserved. This is the energy. Here's the Legendre transformation of that Lagrangian. And here's the energy that's conserved, which is the same as the Bekarevich and Kolotnikov equation energy. Okay. So I'll put these incompressible equations back up and talk about their limits and stop. So again, non-dissipative, but you see there's part of this what used to be called mutual friction part, which is in the non-dissipative description for the coupling. And here's the normal fluid equation, superfluid equation. These guys are incompressible. VL is defined this way. The sum of rho n times that one plus rho s times this one simply cancels out. And the there are three interesting limits. First of all, if T is greater than T lambda, then rho s goes to zero, rho n goes to rho. Rho s going to zero takes us back to the Euler equations right here, right there, right then. And if T goes to zero, then rho n goes to zero, VL minus VS goes to 1 over rho s curl lambda, and this equation here is the Bekarevich and Kolonikoff equation with their T, and minus the mutual friction term. Okay, so that's this T. That's the line tension term in the mutual friction.
That's formally the same equation that comes from the nonlinear Schrodinger.
And that's the one that comes from nonlinear Schrodinger, right. So they were certainly right to put that one in. And if you wish, you can think about the equations I'm showing you as finite temperature corrections and refinements to the Bekarevich-Kolonikoff form. Finally, if the energy is independent of the vorticity, as you go to T equals zero, the VS equation, in fact, also gives you Euler's equation. So if we compare those two, Bekarevich-Kolonikoff without the T in there, then you see what you said. This part here is still the dissipated part that I don't have and would have to put in phenomenologically. This part here, these two are different, but we know that that's actually small, and if we were to sort of take the limit as temperature goes to zero, we could make sense out of thinking of this guy as the T that should go there, and the B prime is small. So, and this term here crossed into omega is what's called the Yerdansky force. It has this Magnus force part, and it has another part that comes from the vortex patch. The force on the... No, stop there.
Could you tell us one instance of what we can understand from these that we couldn't understand before? From these equations?
Well...
it's a friendly question, by the way.
Yes. No, so I think the main thing is that... And if you're going to simulate these equations, right, then you should actually simulate sort of both parts of the force. What's been simulated in the past has been this equation evaluated at zero temperature plus of that one, but with that thing ignored. Okay, that because what was done in the past for simulations was to have that tension force appearing in the superfluid equation and driving the superfluid component, but not appearing in the normal equation, and therefore it's not the proper coupling to preserve momentum in the incompressible limit. So what I learned about this was about this coupling is that it's symmetric. That you don't just have one piece here and nothing there.
But one wonders why didn't they make it unsymmetric to start with?
It was symmetric in their compressible form.
Oh,
it's when they took the incompressible limit that the there was a difficulty.
Peter first and Nam later.
Did anybody do linear analysis? I'm concerned about well posedness. I see an omega there that's one degree more than there is, and it's not along the characteristics, so it's.
It's also here, right?
No, that's the longest characteristic. That's never a problem.
Okay.
The other one, okay?
Uh-huh.
So that's not a loss of derivative. But if I see a derivative hanging in there, then did anybody do a linearization around some reasonable thing?
Let me tell it to you a different way. Let me say it another way. No, the first answer is I don't know. The second answer is if I remove that term by doing the vector calculus, I can write it as minus VS cross omega and put in a gradient here, right? And then that term goes out. And so these guys are in the same, they're of the same type. They're the same type. There's, we left with VL.
Same thing. If I write an equation like that, it might be.
No, but the derivative, the difference is here. It's not in the derivative. You see, if I'm, I purposely put this guy in there, right? So you see the, but actually, this guy here subtracts him and adds a potential part. Actually, this guy here cancels that guy.
Right. You're left with VL cross omega.
VL cross omega. And, oh, and what you're worried about is that omega? Okay.
Well, it's an average omega, I guess. It's not a delta.
Well, then you can argue that.
No, yeah, no, but that's, the,
equation,
there's another,
it's the curl of
there's the another issue. Yeah. This thing, this, the other issue is.
Okay.
No, Peter, it's thing also, that's good, but also conserves energy. Okay, so there will be a, some kind of bound on this.
Can you derive a line vortex model for this? And if you can, where does Klaus Schwarz's simulation fit into this?
I think I can. I think the model admits that type of reduction, but I haven't done it and I don't know the answer. I think that's the
you
word.
Think it can be done?
Yes, I can do. I know. I will bet. I'll bet a nickel. It can be certainly done in two dimensions pretty easily. Okay, and then going to three dimensions will, you know, be the next issue.
Yeah, do you have any solution this is new from, which is kind of simple and new because of this form, because of this term?
I wish. I can't tell you now. I only became involved with this, you know, because of the challenge of describing this coupling,
that's
because of the experiment.
No, this could be. So is there any
other? Is this a completely integrable variable?
No, I don't know.
Now we should leave.
Greg wanted to ask a question. Right?
Yeah, one simple, easy question. So you said at the beginning of your talk that you could develop all this from sort of basically kinematics and
right.
thermodynamics. So it
yes.
sort of suggests you have a postulate basis for this. Could you tell us exactly what are the postulates so it's clear what is the foundation of these equations? So clearly conservation laws are important, but what are the basic postulates you use to lead to this, these equations?
Okay, so there's the first law of thermodynamics for the energy, okay? And the Euler-Poincaré framework that the Lagrangian should be invariant under moving the fluid parcels around by the normal velocity and moving the vortex parcels around by the vortex velocity, and that the phase space should be a direct product of those two diffeomorphism groups. It should be the direct product of the tangent space of those two groups.
So that goes postulates in particular.
That's the postulate I had in mind, and the rest of it follows from the general formalism and the choice of that coupling. But I needed to have.
Does that particular form of the action is also important as well?
That, well, that there's that energy and its first law stuff, and the coupling is the coupling which produces momenta, which are the physical momenta when I take the variational derivatives. So that determines the coupling, assuming it's going to be a polynomial. So it's, I think of it as very kinematic, simply taking Kolmogorov's thermodynamics for the superfluid with this additional lambda and putting it into this geometrical framework using the analog of the Euler-Lagrange equations and the first law of thermodynamics.
I would like to close the questions, but I would like to give 1 minute time to each of the three speakers to tell us what is the most important thing to do. 1 minute you have.
Simulate these equations. Add the viscosity, add the mutual friction term, and simulate the dynamics in some simple hydrodynamic situations like cylindrical Couette flow. Compare with what has been done before by Berenghi and others.
Mark, do you want to say what
I'd say that for me the most important thing to do now is to make careful designed experiment to measure large-scale quantities such as drags, for instance, for I don't know if cylinders or spheres or whatever. And by controlling very accurately things like surface roughness and general control parameters of the flow, to try to compare these measurements done in the superfluid regime this would be useful both to derive a global viscosities of superflows and to see if there is some universality, something that goes beyond the basic question.
Well, there's not much to say. I think the most important part is really to understand what these gaps we have been emphasizing after my talk, that they are there. And we understand where they come from and what we can call these gaps properly. We can really understand what the superfluid data which we measure really mean. And after we are really sure that we know what we are doing, I think that there is another bright future in using the superfluid turbulence for studying the turbulent properties in general. But before we do that, it's very difficult to extend all this into the general point of view.
Are you saying, Daryl, that your equations could in fact be used to get the drag versus Reynolds number kind of thing?
First, I'd be interested in the type of solution. In the classic hydrodynamic situations that they develop, the drag will depend on how the boundary conditions are determined and how they're applied.
Are there any of your conserved quantities, they do give some global or bulk conserved quantities also? Is there anything that you could ask for to be measured that is conserved according to your formulation?
Well, the ideal formulation conserves energy and helicity. In any experiment, the reconnection will destroy the helicity property. And I think first there should be a simulation. The simulations will provide the insight first before the interpretation, because this is basically the flows do not align. Okay, they don't lock to each other. They have a more complicated interaction. That's what these equations say. And one needs to get insight about this interaction. It's not that the as has been seen in other simulations. Superflow does not lock to the normal flow.
There is one aspect of your answer that is not very satisfactory, if I may say, you said similar to these questions, but you should also tell us what aspect, which is what I find earlier, that would give, let's say, the incentive to go through the work. It's something that is important for us to know. Some simple thing one can use to either falsify the things you have, or something that builds our confidence in them so we can proceed with more expense and energy. I think that would be very valuable, and I don't know what your answer would be. What would be the simplest set of things one could do to either say, well, this is not worth pursuing, or it's really worthwhile. I think that would be very valuable.
What about the Schiller?
So I'm thinking about, what about a measurement of some kind of inhomogeneous vortex patch?
So we'll forgive all the people who are leaving now.
Are your equations capable of doing a second sound?
Yes.
And the experiment, the first thing you do is an approximation.